Support for WAMC comes from Stagecoach Tavern at Racebrook Lodge, Route 41, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Introducing Shay's Lounge, a place to gather, eat, and drink with comedy. StagecoachTavern.net. Williams College Museum of Art, featuring 3 centuries of American art. An exhibition of familiar museum favorites, including Edward Hopper's Morning in a City, now on view. WCMA.williams.edu. Water Furnace, providing energy-efficient geothermal heating, cooling, and hot water for homes and commercial buildings. WaterFurnace.com. Ellis Medicine, providing comprehensive inpatient and outpatient health care in Schenectady and Southern Saratoga counties. EllisMedicine.org. This is a WAMC News Update. I'm Brian Shields. A judge has indicated that he will formally sentence Boston Marathon bomber Joe Harsanyi to death next month after hearing from about 20 victims. Judge George O'Toole said during a status conference today that Sarnaev's formal sentencing hearing will be set for sometime in June, but he did not set an exact date. A jury last week determined that Sarnaev should get the death penalty in the 2013 attack. As federal investigators get a better look at a grapefruit-sized crack on the windshield of the Amtrak train that derailed last week, they say they know now it was not caused by a gunshot. Investigators are raising new questions about the events that led up to the derailment that killed 8 people and injured more than 200 others. They say the engineer of a regional train does not remember telling the Amtrak engineer that his train was hit by a rock or shot at. That's what the Amtrak assistant conductor thought she had heard. Ever since the 2% tax cap became law, fewer New Yorkers are voting on their school budgets. That's according to the New York State School Boards Association, which says voter turnout has dropped 20% since the tax cap was introduced 3 years ago. According to a survey by the association, 88% of school board members in New York expect today's voter turnout will be at or below previous levels. Some new charges have emerged against a former Berkshire's police chief facing trial on charges he looted a fund set up to buy toys for children. The Berkshire Eagle says new documents indicate former Lee Police Chief Joseph Buffus allegedly took $31,000 from a church bingo fund. The trial was scheduled to begin this week in Springfield, but it has been moved to next week after Buffus was hospitalized for an undisclosed reason. The Vermont Department of Corrections says the state's prison inmates being housed out of state are moving to Michigan. The department said today it signed a contract with the GEO Group to house the inmates at the North Lake Correctional Facility in Baldwin, Michigan. Currently, Vermont is housing 319 inmates at facilities in Kentucky and Arizona. That contract expires next month. The department will begin transferring the inmates to Michigan soon. For years, Vermont has sent a number of its inmates out of state to alleviate overcrowding in Vermont prisons. U.S. home builders ramped up construction in April to the fastest pace in nearly 7.5 years. The Commerce Department says housing starts increased 20.2% to a seasonally adjusted rate of 1.14 million homes. The pace ranks as the fastest since November 2007. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 18 points at 18,317, NASDAQ down 4, 5,074. S&P up less than a point at 21.29. The weather forecast, a partly sunny afternoon, some showers and storms possible. Highs mid to upper 70s. Breezy, cooler tonight, partly cloudy, low in the mid-60s. A mix of sun and clouds on Wednesday, breezy and cooler, mid-60s. Partly to mostly sunny Thursday and Friday, highs in the 60s. Westover, Vermont, it's cloudy, it's 59. Sheffield, Massachusetts, in the Berkshires, cloudy, 62. Cobleskill at 73. Albany mostly cloudy, 64 degrees. You're listening to Midday Magazine on WAMC. A police officer in Saratoga Springs has been suspended after a confrontation with a First Amendment rights crusader from Troy. WAMC's Capital Region Bureau Chief Dave Lucas has the story.
Adam Rupica, who runs the anti-police website CopBlock, explained on YouTube that he had received a tip from a concerned citizen of Saratoga Springs that the local police department was corrupt and abusive to citizens. So, the story goes, he drove from Troy to Saratoga, where he proceeded to salute a policeman with his middle finger, who then pulled him over.
Hello, license
registration? What are you pulling me over for?
I'll be glad to tell you soon to give me your information.
Well, I'll give you my information once you can articulate what crime I've committed.
Okay, license registration.
What crime have I committed?
Okay, step out of the vehicle.
What crime have I committed?
Step out of the vehicle.
This is being recorded.
I saw your camera. Step out of the vehicle.
After exchanging words, the officer, identified as Nathan Baker, deployed pepper spray, according to Rupica's account, in an effort to coax Rupica into a more cooperative mode.
Step out of the vehicle. You're under arrest for disorderly conduct. Step out.
That's not a charge for...
Rupica lashed out, threatening legal action after being spritzed with the irritant.
Then step out of the vehicle.
I'm going to sue the... out of you guys. I am!
Mario Cometti with law firm Tully Rinke says Rupica's right to freedom of speech allowed him to gesture to the officer.
The person who was arrested may have a valid lawsuit against the police department for malicious prosecution if they continue with this and for false arrest. The United States Court of Appeals had a similar case in the Second Circuit. The gist of which was decided on January 3rd of 2013, in which a person was pulled over for exactly the same type of thing, for an obscene gesture, and they allowed the lawsuit against the police department to continue, and the Second Circuit specifically stated that an obscene gesture like the given a police officer the finger was not a sufficient and legal basis to pull them over.
There's a link to the Second Circuit ruling that set precedent at WAMC.org. Saratoga Springs Police did not return a call for comment. Police Chief Gregory Veach issued a statement to the press, quote, "I am aware of the video that has been posted on YouTube and on the Facebook page of Capital District CopBlock. I take very seriously any allegation of improper use of force made against any officer of the Saratoga Springs Police Department, and I have been in contact with Mr. Rupica regarding this incident." Committee says police officers would be best to ignore obscene gestures from passing motorists.
By now, police officers should be aware that this is something that they should just turn a blind eye to or get a thick skin.
Rupica did not respond to a request for comment via email. Melanie Trimble is the chapter director for the New York Civil Liberties Union in the Capital Region.
We've heard from him on a message machine, and I've tried to return his call. We haven't spoken yet. We're playing phone tag. So I don't have any contact with him. I don't know what he wants from us, so I can't really comment on that.
What about citizens using obscene gestures against law enforcement personnel?
Well, we don't encourage people to do it. Obviously, videos can be very helpful in verifying what actually happened in these encounters. At the same time, good things can be recorded, and I think that that's important to remember, that not all law enforcement officers behave badly, and we don't have the hundreds of videos that could be shown to show good behavior, too.
City police released a statement Monday afternoon to say Rupica was charged with resisting arrest, along with a traffic infraction of having an obstructed view in violation of Section 375-20 of the Vehicle and Traffic Law, on apparent reference to a dashboard camera. Dave Lucas, WAMC News.
The Plattsburgh City Charter Commission held a public hearing last evening, during which a number of ideas and concerns over the possibility of changing the city's form of government were discussed. As a result, the commission could take another year to present the changes. WAMC's North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley was at the hearing.
The Plattsburgh City Charter Commission has been tasked with updating and revising the more than 100-year-old document that guides the city government. The 12 commission members created three subcommittees to review changes in language, a mayor-council form of government, and a council-manager form of government. A survey was sent to city residents, and public hearings are being held to determine the community's preferred governance structure. On Monday evening, about 24 very vocal voters showed up to express their ideas.
I'm James Armstrong. What makes the subcommittee on the strong mayor city council system believe that that's the most effective way of running the city? What research have you looked into that suggests that that is a more effective system than, say, a city manager system?
What we looked into were the past administrations of the city.
I still want to know if you've looked at any research that suggests that one model is more effective than the other.
There are 62 cities in the state of New York. 46 of them have strong mayor councils. 15 are ruled by city manager with a weaker mayor council, if you will, and one which is actually governed by county.
Stuart Voss, Ward 3. I served on the 1990 City Charter Commission. Most of our counties around us have a city manager form of government. They have a legislative body, and then they have either a kind of administrative assistant like Clinton County does, or a regular county manager, which basically Essex has, and which Franklin has, and which Warren County has. So it isn't like this is a brand new thing coming in here. For me, the more that the power of the city can be distributed and not accumulated in the hands of one or a small group of people, the better off the city is going to be.
Hi, Kimberly Davis, Ward 3. On the one hand, I have seen city managers work in other areas. The problem I see is when you have one that isn't effective, that can have a huge damage on the bottom line. There was a small town in Vermont recently who had to pay out $180,000 to buy out their manager. I'm for a mayor as a partner with the council. If we hired a city manager and then had an elected mayor, what's that going to cost?
If we impose a city manager in the chain of governance in Plattsburgh, you're inserting a non-democratically elected official, usually subject to a very long-term contract, who has no role or responsibility directly to the taxpayers. I find this a derogation of democratic principles that I think we need to be thinking about when we revise our city charter.
Chair Luke Cipher says citizen input is greatly helping the committee, and their timeline to present the charter changes by November may need to be adjusted.
To clean up the language in the existing charter, we're right on schedule. Some of the more contentious issues, we have another year, technically, if we wanted to. The mayor had suggested we try to get everything we can onto the ballot in the November elections, but there's some sentiment on the commission not to just throw something out there, and I think we might look into, in some of these more contentious issues, like form of governance, waiting till 2016.
The next public hearing will be in June. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
The Monroe Post Office has been renamed in honor of Greg David Winzel, a native of Monroe, New York, who joined the CIA in the first post-9/11 class and became a member of the National Clandestine Service. Hudson Valley correspondent Hank Gross reports.
Winzel joined the CIA in the first post-9/11 class and became a member of the National Clandestine Service of the Central Intelligence Agency. He was killed at age 33 on July 9, 2003, while serving in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. His memory has now been forever memorialized in Monroe with the renaming of the Monroe Post Office in his honor. Even though the family knew Greg had been killed, they sought to have his death withheld from the public initially, says his father, Mitchell.
We did not push for him to be disclosed right away as a CIA clandestine officer for the simple reason of the people that were probably working for him, and also to not jeopardize anybody else's lives that was in contact with them.
Winzel is the first CIA officer to be afforded the distinction of having a federal building named in his memory. For WAMC in the Hudson Valley, I'm Hank Gross.
One o'clock today, TED Radio Today at 2 on Vox Pop Rail Safety. Amtrak's Northeast Corridor routes are back in service, even as the investigators are still looking for answers in the Philadelphia derailment that killed 8 and injured a dozen more last week. The crash prompted fresh calls from lawmakers and others to install positive train control and increase infrastructure spending. Speaking with WAMC's Alan Chartok on the Congressional Corner, Massachusetts Representative Jim McGovern, a Democrat from the 2nd District, says the U.S. is doing a poor job of keeping up.
The fact of the matter is that it's not just our rail service. Our roads and our bridges, all of our transportation infrastructure is crumbling. It's aging. It's getting old. And we're not putting the money in to upgrade the infrastructure or improve it where necessary. And so we'll have to wait and see what the investigation ultimately shows in the Amtrak tragedy. But the fact of the matter is, there's no denying that these rail lines are old. These train cars are old. Everything is old, and there are some serious questions about safety. And what Congress needs to do is pass a long-term, adequately funded transportation bill, and let's fix everything. Not only our rail systems, but our roads and our bridges. You know, in Massachusetts, we have bridges that are older than most of the other states in this country, and all these reports that come out over and over and over again that tell us how deficient our infrastructure is, and yet we're in Congress and we can't even get the Committee of Jurisdiction to report out a transportation bill. And the only way to fix this is to invest in it, and we need to do that.
Do you think that the Republicans who oppose this, after all, it is their house right now and they're in charge, and you can't get a bill out of the Transportation Committee, which suggests maybe they don't want one out, don't they hear about lousy roads? Don't they hear about lousy bridges?
Well, they do when they say things like, well, let's privatize this and privatize that, or we need better management and, you know the usual kind of double talk. But here's the deal. The problem is that, you know, you have a lot of these Republicans who have signed petitions, you know, when they were running for office, saying that they would not ever vote to raise any new revenues. And as a result, they're kind of in a box. You cannot embark on a major improvement of our infrastructure without finding additional revenues. You cannot cut the discretionary budget any more than it already has been cut. Because, quite frankly, they came and passed their own appropriations bills because the levels on discretionary spending have been cut so much. So, you know, you get these people who made these promises that, you know, I can't raise the gas tax, or I can't raise this or that, or I can't close the tax loophole, or I can't, you know, eliminate provisions that allow companies to move overseas and not pay taxes. You know, and as a result of that, we're kind of at a standstill.
Let's assume for a second that you're right, they promised. So there's only one other way, and that is if you can't find the money to repair the bridges and the roads, then you have to take it from some other place. Now, we're still in a war economy in this country.
Right.
And what is it about their pledge that doesn't permit them to take some money out of putting money into something we really don't need?
Right. Well, look, as you know, for a long, long time, I've been advocating that we need to find a way to get out of these wars that we're in. We've spent trillions of dollars. Let me put it this way. We've borrowed trillions of dollars because we don't even pay for it. We just put it on our credit card. But it would seem to me that investing in our infrastructure is better for our national defense than, you know, dropping all these bombs and deploying our troops all over the world the way we're doing right now. I mean, this is a real need. I saw a report the other day that of the 25 most best airports in the world, none of them are in the United States, in part because other countries have invested more in their infrastructure than we have. And, you know, we used to be number one in everything, and I think we ought to get back to that view where we ought to have the best airports, the best railway system, the best roads, the best and most safe bridges, you know, anywhere in this world. And I will tell you, I think, and what I've found is that if people know where these additional revenues are being invested, if they know, for example, that if you raise the gas tax, or if you find a close a loophole, and that money goes right into transportation infrastructure, can't go into the general fund, only can be spent on that. I found that, you know, there's bipartisan consensus outside of the Beltway that that's a good idea. Everybody gets it. Unfortunately, Congress is kind of lagging behind.
Massachusetts Congressman Democrat Jim McGovern speaking with WAMC's Alan Chartok. Support for WAMC comes from Sunwood Builders, Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits, working to save energy while maintaining design features. Sunwood-Builders.com. Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York, purchasing jewelry and diamonds, coin collections, silver antiques, fine art, and estates. MarkLawson.com. Vatican's Nursery, Latham, New York, featuring flowering container gardens, Zen pots for shade, perennials, flowering shrubs, berry bushes, and gardening guidance, independent since 1920. Vatican's.com. Meteorologist Paul Cayano has the regional weather summary.
Good afternoon. Partly sunny skies will lead to scattered showers and some thunderstorms this afternoon, depending on how much warm air gets into the region. Some of the storms could pack a punch with gusty winds and heavy rainfall. Of course, lightning accompanying any thunderstorms is dangerous, and we could also have some small hail. These storms will move through late in the afternoon, and into the evening we'll start a drying trend as the front marches through New England and off the coast. This will usher in much cooler air as we head into the night tonight under partly cloudy skies and an increasing west-northwest wind. Temperatures will drop back into the 40s. We'll be dry tomorrow with a mix of sun and clouds, but a healthy breeze out of the northwest at times gusting to 30, driving in that cooler air and keeping highs in the lower to mid-60s. Back into the 60s on Thursday with a mix of sun and clouds. Another front could produce a shower or two on Friday, otherwise partly sunny and breezy, back into the mid-60s. On Saturday, we'll start out with a chill, perhaps even some frost across the higher terrain. Then, with mostly sunny skies, we'll rebound back into the 60s. This will be followed by a warming trend for the rest of the holiday weekend with 70s on Sunday and Monday. Taking a look at potentially significant weather today, the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma, has outlined an area of a slight risk of severe thunderstorms across the southern high plains. A warm front will advance slowly north into southern Oklahoma this afternoon, with substantial moistening expected to return aloft across the Red River region. This will enhance the prospect for one or more mesoscale convective-type complexes through the evening. While gusty winds may be noted along the leading edge of the complexes, it appears greater buoyancy along the southern and western fringe of this activity would be more supportive of large hail. Additionally, isolated supercells could develop across the high plains south of an MCS along the dry line. Strongest boundary layer heating is expected across this region, and a few tornadoes could develop with these discrete structures, in addition to the large hail and wind. Meanwhile, winter storm warnings have been issued for the highest terrain of the Colorado Rockies, where 10 to 20 inches of heavy wet snow is expected above 10,000 feet. And freeze warnings have been issued for almost all of the Dakotas into parts of the Midwest and Great Lakes. Temperatures will drop into the 20s in many locations by tomorrow morning. The past 24 hours, lower 48 states temperature extremes ran from a high of 97 degrees at Presidio, Texas, to a low of 22 at Scobie, Montana. For those traveling across the Northeast today, New York City mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms in the upper 70s, Boston mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the upper 50s, and in Buffalo partly sunny and breezy with highs in the upper 50s. The average high temperature in Albany today, 70 degrees, the average low, 48. The record high, 91, set in 1989, and the record low, 29, in 1981. Sunrise this morning was at 5:29 a.m., sunset this evening, 8:15 p.m., 14 hours and 46 minutes of daylight, an increase of 2 minutes from yesterday. Here are my latest regional forecasts for the northern Adirondacks and central and northern Vermont, as well as the Champlain Valley and Lake George area. Partly sunny and breezy today, scattered showers and thunderstorms possible with highs in the mid to upper 70s. Partly cloudy and windy tonight, lows in the 40s. For the Connecticut Valley and mid and lower Hudson Valley, as well as for the remainder of interior southern New England, partly sunny, breezy today with scattered showers and thunderstorms and highs in the lower 80s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the lower 50s. For the northern Catskills and Mohawk Valley west of Amsterdam, as well as for the southern Adirondacks, partly sunny and breezy today with scattered showers and thunderstorms and highs in the mid to upper 70s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the middle 40s. for the Southern Catskills, Taconics, and Southern Berkshires, as well as for the Litchfield Hills. Partly sunny today, breezy with scattered showers and thunderstorms and highs in the upper 70s to around 80. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the upper 40s. For the Greater Capital District, including Albany, Schenectady, and Troy, as well as for the Saratoga area, east into southern Vermont and the Berkshires north of I-90. Partly sunny and breezy today with scattered showers and thunderstorms and highs in the upper 70s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the upper 40s. Region-wide for tomorrow, a mix of sun and clouds, breezy and much cooler in the lower to mid-60s, a mix of sun and clouds, upper 60s Thursday, a passing shower Friday, otherwise partly sunny, mid-60s, mostly sunny Saturday, in the middle to upper 60s, lower 70s with sunny skies on Sunday, and mostly sunny in the upper 70s on Monday. For WAMC, I'm News Channel 13 meteorologist Paul Caiano.
Support for WAMC comes from Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences, offering a master's degree in health outcomes research for students interested in the economics of healthcare, acphs.edu. Paradise City Festival, a three-day festival of art, crafts, music, and food, Memorial Day weekend at the Three County Fairgrounds in Northampton, Massachusetts, ParadiseCityArts.com. Albany's Down Tube Bicycle Works, offering seasonal tune-ups and custom sales while we rebuild Facebook for current service hours and location, downtubebicycleworks.com.
Hi, this is Sarah LaDuke. Summer is almost here, and with that comes the promise of sunny, warmer weather, countless events in the region, and our June fun drive. We can't control, but we'll always report the weather, and we always do our best to make sure you know about the events that might interest you. But the fun drive is up to you, and you can do your part early by contributing to the lockbox. Go ahead, pledge online at wamc.org.
This is a WAMC News Update. I'm Brian Shields. Top stories: U.S. intelligence agencies are investigating the possibility that the Islamic State militant leader killed Friday by U.S. commandos was at one time the captor of American hostage Kayla Mueller. Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, confirmed the connection but declined further comment. Mueller's death was announced in February. New York's top bank regulator wants to amend state law to shorten the foreclosure process for homes with delinquent mortgages. Department of Financial Services Superintendent Ben Lawsky, addressing mortgage bankers today, says New York's process averages 900 days from the date of filing to the sale of the property. That's nearly double the national average. Lawsky proposes specifying in law what the term means, saying conferences are frequently plagued by delays that worsen homeowners' prospects for keeping their homes. The Springfield City Council approved a plan calling for local police officers to wear body cameras. Council voted 10-0 in support of the measure on Monday. A state Senate vote in Connecticut could come today on a revised casino bill, setting up a two-step process for Connecticut's two federally recognized Indian tribes to move forward for a new tribal casino. Senate leader Bob Duff says the new plan addresses legal issues raised by the Attorney General George Jepson and also seeks to protect the current casino jobs. Support for WAMC comes from SUNY Ulster Stone Ridge, presenting the Own It Entrepreneurial Women's Conference, a day of workshops providing advice for growing a business, June 4th, sunyulster.edu/ownit. A group of nine Iraqi nationals are suing the U.S. government over the lengthy processing time for special immigrant visas. These visas are only available to Iraqis and Afghans who worked alongside the U.S. military during wars in those countries, usually as interpreters. The delays can last years, leaving families in administrative limbo or worse. As the court case plays out, the Innovation Trail's Danielle Price reports on the upstate New York connections to this complex issue.
It's one of the year's first perfect spring days as Aziz trolls the Wegmans supermarket parking lot for stray shopping carts. Aziz doesn't mind logging long hours walking the asphalt. It's nothing compared to the hiking he used to do in his native Afghanistan.
Very different terrain, so like in mountains. But over here it's flat, it's clean. Yeah.
So it doesn't even feel like work?
Yeah. For me it's like a picnic.
Aziz worked as an interpreter with the U.S. military in Afghanistan for a decade. He went everywhere the American soldiers went, translating for NATO forces and high-ranking officers like Brigadier General Günter Katz. He started his military career in 2004, a time when Afghanistan was, in his words, totally destroyed.
And on that time, I went to just help the country, help the people, help the international community to rebuild Afghanistan.
It was a good job, but one with a lot of risk.
Nobody will like you when they will find out that you're working as an interpreter for the foreign forces in Afghanistan.
Aziz started getting threat letters and messages passed along from the Taliban. Then the Taliban commander sent a direct message.
You should never come back to the village, and if we will caught you in the city, so you will be killed.
The Special Immigrant Visa, or SIV program, first began in 2008 when it became clear the lives of Iraqi interpreters and military support staff were at serious risk because of their work with the U.S. military. The program expanded to include Afghans a year later. But advocates say the program has some serious flaws, one of which is being addressed through a lawsuit against the U.S. government. 9 Iraqi plaintiffs have filed the suit with the help of the Iraqi Refugee Assistance Project, or IRAP. Mark Doss, a lawyer with IRAP, says the government really hasn't prioritized these cases the way they promised to.
The government, as mandated by Congress in 2013, said the process should take 9 months. So we are seeing this take years and years over what is required by Congress.
The lawsuit isn't trying to get the visas for the interpreters. It's just asking that they get answers on their cases in a reasonable time frame. As it stands, the cases are held up in what's called administrative processing, code for security checks.
They can check their case status online, and it says the same thing, administrative processing. So they never get any information other than that.
Aziz applied for his visa in 2011. He didn't get it until 2014. At this point in the story, it's important to explain why I keep referring to Aziz by his first name. On top of the struggle of just getting the visa, a Kafkaesque situation has left Aziz one of many SIV holders who lost their last names in the process. It's too complicated to really get into here, but basically, because of different conventions across international governing bodies, some of Aziz's immigration documents correctly listed his full name, while others left him with a Madonna-like one-name existence. When his paperwork was processed in the U.S., Aziz, his wife, and their 3 kids were all given the same legal first name, the acronym FNU for First Name Unknown. Their real first names shifted to become their last. With just one name on their Social Security cards, Aziz's family almost had their benefits cut off soon after resettling. Navigating the DMV with a single name is no picnic. And filing taxes? Yeah, right.
When I submit all the forms to the IRS, yeah? Mm-hmm. So after that, I received an answer that your Social Security card is invalid because you do not have your last name.
Despite the troubles with Aziz's name, he's actually faring pretty well. With his good English and his steady job at Wegmans, Aziz is adjusting to his new life in Rochester. For other SIV holders, the transition is a lot harder. Barbara Gowinski supervises therapists at U of R's Highland Family Medicine who treat SIV holders. Her team often sees all the symptoms of post-traumatic stress syndrome in their patients.
And so, like anyone who's been in trauma situations, the soldiers are at it all the time. So they have the same trauma and anxiety.
But because SIV holders are classified as refugees, not as veterans, they're not able to access the targeted services and therapies regular vets can get from the VA.
Asking for help is really, really humiliating. So when someone finally gets to the place where they're ready to ask for help and they feel like there's no help available, it's even more demoralizing that they put their neck out, ask for help, and then it's not available.
Retired Army Captain Matt Zeller is founder of No One Left Behind, an organization he started to help former interpreters and other SIV holders after experiencing his own interpreter saga escaping Afghanistan. At a recent meeting, he told the story of one family to his Rochester chapter volunteers. An Afghan doctor who had been resettled in Washington, D.C. with his wife and 2 kids had emailed Zeller. The family had fallen through the cracks and made the gut-wrenching decision to go back to Afghanistan.
And upon arrival, within 3 weeks, they were being hunted by the Taliban. They received a letter addressed to them saying, "We know you've returned. We're coming to kill you." And this former translator, who again had been a doctor, emailed me and asked, could I help him get him and his family back to America and this time actually take care of them? And I said I'd do anything I possibly could help, and I never heard from him again. I found out 3 weeks after that I sent the reply, the whole family was killed.
To Zeller, this isn't just a humanitarian issue. It's a national security issue.
If we fail to honor our commitment to these fine folk, either by not giving them their visas or by not properly taking care of them and assimilating them when they arrive here to the point that they feel they need to go back only to be killed, this is not going to be the last war that our country fights.
For Aziz, the helping hand at Wegmans, a little piece of good news just arrived. Aziz figured his family would just have to learn to live with being FNU, first name unknown, until they can apply for citizenship in 5 years and change their names. Changing them all before that point would cost about $2,000, and that's not in the picture. But the Department of Homeland Security just approved a process to acknowledge the mistake was made by the government and waive the change fee. Besides making it easier to file taxes, restoring their names will give Aziz's family back a little bit of the identity they had to leave behind. Aziz is making a point to retain as much of that identity as he can for his kids.
No.
Before working the afternoon shift, he shepherds his family to Sunday school at the Islamic Center of Rochester. On the Sunday I interview him, the kids silently scurry around the house, prepping book bags and jackets before Aziz's wife secures sparkly headscarves on the two girls. Aziz waits in the parking lot while she brings the kids in. There are just too many bad memories from the war that involve mosques, he explains. But it's important that his kids go, both to stay connected to their culture and to step forward into their new lives. In Rochester, I'm Danielle Price for the Innovation Trail.
Reporting by the Innovation Trail, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. More information at innovationtrail.org. O'clock today on WAMC TED Radio, today at 2 on Vox Pop, infrastructure and rail safety in light of last week's Amtrak accident. Today at 2 on Vox Pop, your calls are welcome. The musical My Fair Lady was made famous by the film with Rex Harrison and Audrey Hepburn, adapted from the original story Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw, about class in English society. Tonight, a 15-minute section of My Fair Lady will be performed for the first time in almost 60 years. The section was cut from the musical after just one preview show, and the score was believed to be lost. However, it was found in an archive, and now songs originally sung by Rex Harrison and Julie Andrews will be aired once again during a special concert at the University of Sheffield in the UK. The BBC's Colin Patterson reports from the rehearsals.
Oh, come to the ball, oh, come to the ball. It wouldn't be fair to the men who were there to deny them.
This song has not been heard since the 4th of February 1956.
There even may be a dashing marquee who feature by feature will swear you're the creature he's always prayed for.
The night My Fair Lady had its first preview performance in Connecticut.
If you aren't there, his complete despair would be painful to see.
Dominic McHugh, a musicologist from the University of Sheffield, was at the Library of Congress in Washington researching the musical and, with a little bit of luck, came across 15 boxes of papers from the original production.
I was going through about the eighth box and I found the music for a ballet that was in the show and only was performed once at the very first preview in New Haven.
It dealt with a second set of elocution lessons between Professor Higgins and Eliza Doolittle after her spectacular failure at Ascot.
Come on, Dover! Move your blooming arse!
The ballet was about 7 minutes long, and on either side of it was a song, and all three of them were cut.
Did it actually make the show better?
All the accounts say that the show was wonderful at the first preview, but that it went on all night. It really needed that bit of trimming.
Consider the Lord, so frantically bored. He's leaving his kin and becoming an Indian Lancer.
Alan J. Lerner wrote the lyrics for the musical, and his widow, the actress Liz Robertson, says the cuts would not have been made lightly.
Come to the Ball, I do know, because Alan loved it. He really, really loved it. He loved the interrhyming. He'd worked very hard on the song.
Farewell, Lance.
And it was Rex Harrison's song that he was going to sing just before Eliza went to the ball. It was going to be Rex's pièce de résistance.
So come to the ball, come to the ball.
What did Alan tell you about the writing process, and how upset would he be when something he'd worked on for weeks and weeks and weeks was cut out after one night?
He was never sentimental. If it didn't work, get rid of it, and he never looked back. But the writing process was agony for him.
As Lerner confirmed when he spoke to the BBC in 1961.
All I want is somewhere.
Wouldn't it be lovely? It took about 7 weeks. And I must say, after 5 weeks, I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown.
He eventually got it finished, but he always hated the last chorus.
Someone's resting on my knee.
He said, no, this isn't Eliza, but he could never, never find the other verse to that, and he hated it.
The second lost song being performed tonight was for Eliza.
At the end of the series of lessons, she sings a song to the housekeeper, Mrs. Pierce, and basically says, say a prayer for me because I don't know how my next test is going to go, and it means everything to me. They salvaged some of the material from Say a Prayer for Me Tonight in the movie Gigi, which was their next project.
Pray I'll be Wellington, not Bonaparte.
But the lyrics that were heard in My Fair Lady were different, and the orchestration was quite different.
That he's lonely, a ship.
This music hasn't been heard since 1956 in this form.
Searching for someone.
And Liz Robertson is delighted that the lost 15 minutes is being performed again.
This is such a thrill for everyone to hear, and certainly for the Lerner family. It's very exciting.
Long ago someone.
And would you like the songs back in the show permanently?
No, it wouldn't work.
The BBC's Colin Patterson. Support for WAMC comes from Berkshire International Film Festival, presenting May Rue, Peggy Guggenheim, Art Addict, and Live from New York, May 28th through the 31st in Great Barrington and Pittsfield, featuring 80 independent docs, features, and short films, community screenings, and special events. BIFFMA.org for information. Evoke Style in Stuyvesant Plaza, specializing in women's clothing, shoes, handbags, accessories, gifts, and more. EvokeStyle.com. Eagle Hill School, Hardwick, Massachusetts, a college prep, boarding, and day school for students with learning disabilities and ADD, featuring a 5-week summer session. EHS1.org for info. Mary Irish with Wall Street.
At about 12:30, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 16 points to 18,315. The Standard & Poor's 500 Index is unchanged at 2,129, and the NASDAQ Composite is down 4 points to 5,075. The breadth of the market is negative, with 9 declining stocks for every 5 advancing issues, and the 30-year Treasury bond is yielding 3%. Some of the most active stocks on the big board today include Panera, up 447 to 187.67. Walmart is down $3.46 to 76.47, and Disney is up 38 cents to 110.71. In the overseas markets last night, Tokyo's Nikkei Index closed 1% higher, and in Hong Kong, the Hang Seng Index was unchanged. From Morgan Stanley Wealth Management in Niskayuna, New York, this is Mary Irish bringing you the Wall Street Update for WAMC.
Support for Stardate comes from Bedard Brothers Cheshire, featuring 7 brands in 1 location, Chevrolet, Honda, Volvo, Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram, plus late model pre-owned cars and trucks. It's hard to beat Bedard. Online, bedardbrothers.com. Brad Will, a Shokan Architecture and Planning in Kingston's Midtown Arts District. Energy-efficient architecture and planning throughout the Mid-Hudson Valley, ashokanarchitecture.com. Capital Region Parade of Homes, a tour featuring 12 new designed custom homes constructed by area builders to benefit the Center for Disability Services, May 30th and 31st and June 6th and 7th, CapitalRegionParadeOfHomes.com.
Stardate, May 19. Only a handful of worlds in the solar system are considered to be realistic homes for life. Two of those are moons of Saturn, Enceladus and Titan. Geysers of water and ice shoot into space from cracks around the south pole of Enceladus. The geysers appear to come from an ocean of liquid water that's far below the moon's icy crust. The geysers also carry minerals that likely come from the bottom of that ocean. That gives Enceladus all the basic ingredients for life as we know it. Water, a source of energy to keep it from freezing, and the right mineral content. Titan is the largest of Saturn's moons. It may have an even bigger ocean below the surface than Enceladus does, giving it the right ingredients for life as well. Its surface is less hospitable. Titan has a cold atmosphere that's rich in hydrocarbons and lakes of liquid hydrocarbons. Those conditions aren't especially friendly to life like that on Earth. But it could be friendly to life that's not as we know it. Scientists at Cornell found that compounds in Titan's atmosphere and lakes could form cell membranes similar to the water-based membranes that are important for life on Earth. That suggests that life might be possible on the surface of this amazing moon. And Saturn itself is putting in an amazing appearance right now. It looks like a bright golden star in the southeast as night falls and arcs across the south during the night. More about Saturn tomorrow. Stardate is made possible in part by Northrop Grumman, pushing the boundaries of possibility in the space industry since the dawn of the space age. Details at northropgrumman.com/space. For the MacDonald Observatory, I'm Sandy Wood.
Support for Stardate comes from Twillis, Ford, Gold, Butler & Monroe, LLP, a New York law firm representing physicians and healthcare professionals for over 100 years, nymeddefense.com. Waka Waka solar-powered phone chargers and lights for anyone in the world living without access to electricity. Share the sun, waka-waka.com. Best Cleaners, 11 locations throughout the Capital Region offering tailoring, bridal, household, and shoe cleaning, plus home delivery, lookyourbest.com. The unofficial kickoff to the summer season is Monday, Memorial Day. That has our commentator, Ohav Shalom Rabbi Dan Ornstein, thinking about getting back to the water.
As the summer approaches, I'm beginning to think about one of my favorite activities, kayaking. I love kayaking so much, I would kayak every day if not for one small impediment. I'm a lousy kayaker. Physical coordination is not my strength, and lacking the coordination to manage a kayak oar properly is an excellent example of my limitations. I've been instructed many times on how to paddle and steer a kayak using one's back and shoulders. The most common beginner's kayaking mistake is to row from your arms. You discover quickly enough that this tires you out and is an insufficient means of propulsion. Just about every beginner figures out how to stop paddling with his or her arms after about 20 minutes in a kayak. After more than one exciting kayaking expedition, I'm still a beginner. When I was on the Florida Keys this past January, I decided to join one of the many kayaking eco tours in the area. We were paddling out to the renowned mangrove swamps at sunset, and I wanted so much to see the thousands of egrets, pelicans, and cormorants who nest there, keeping silent, regal watch over their kingdoms, which are being shrunk by human habitation and industry. Yet from experience, I suspected how the whole thing would go down. Our guide would give us the 5-minute paddling tutorial. I would nod to indicate that I understood. I would barely stay balanced while settling into the cockpit, and I would spend the next 2 hours flailing around in the water, struggling to catch up to the rest of the expedition, making a fool of myself, or putting my life in danger. In my defense, I actually started off well. Over the first 40 minutes, I huffed and puffed my way out to the mangroves, trailing just behind the guide and the other kayakers. We reached the islands right before a cloudy sunset and listened to him talk to us about the beautiful birds that we saw standing guard in the trees. With nightfall, we donned headlamps and looked for bioluminescent creatures jumping in the water. I felt fleet as a fish, free as a bird, doing what I loved, absent of self-consciousness. Then the hard part began. The guide led us into the branch-twisted maze inside the mangroves, which are really swamps built upon deep water roots. I banged my boat helplessly into the thickets. I got separated from the group in pitch blackness. The people behind me got separated from them, too. My seat back broke, placing enormous strain upon my sore back muscles. As we returned to the docks, everyone else but me caught the downwind, while I flailed yet again in circles, banged around by the strong evening ocean currents. Our frustrated guide had to tow me back into the docks. As he did, he complained, "Now I'm worried that you will not tell people to kayak with my tour business." "You don't understand," I responded, standing in front of him, drenched and exhausted. "I had one of the best times of my life." I really did have one of the best times of my life that night. Alone on the water earlier that evening, I looked into the black sky and told God, "Thank you. Thank you for giving me the courage, calm, and drive to do something I love, despite how poorly I do it. Thank you for giving me a body which still works, a heart which beats with strength, and a back which will recover after a few ibuprofen. Thank you for giving me the wisdom to understand that life's legitimate pleasures are to be enjoyed now, without worry or concern for what others think of me or for when I will no longer be able to enjoy them. Thank you for this most excellent kayaking disaster."
Dan Ornstein is rabbi of Congregational Hav Shalom and a writer living in Albany. The views from our commentators are solely those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the views of WAMC or its management. Your views are welcome. The comment line is open, 800-695-9170, 800-695-9170. Wall Street Dow up 22 points, 18,321. NASDAQ down 3, 5,075. The S&P up a point, 2130. The weather forecast, a partly sunny afternoon, some showers and thunderstorms possible, highs upper 70s, breezy cooler tonight, low in the 60s, a mix of sun and clouds, breezy cooler tomorrow, highs in the 60s, partly to mostly sunny both Thursday and Friday, highs each day in the 60s. Support for WAMC comes from Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs, and Colony, New York. Purchasing jewelry and diamonds, coin collections, silver, antiques, fine art, and estates, marklawson.com. Rockefeller College of Public Affairs and Policy on UAlbany's downtown campus, offering full, part-time, and evening studies in public administration and policy. albany.edu/Rockefeller. Mass Mocha North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting The Lone Bellow in concert Saturday in Jim Shaw in the Galleries, massmocha.org. Thank you for joining us today on WAMC's Midday Magazine. Our engineer, Dave Hopper. I'm Brian Shields. TED Radio next.